Let's say our opening prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Dearest Mother,
Beloved David,
Beloved David,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you,
and bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Oh. Oh. Peace.
Peace.
Bliss.
Bliss.
Amen.
Amen.
Do a short meditation. from the Bible. This is from Mark chapter 11, beginning with verse 22. And Jesus answering, saith unto them, Have faith in God. For verily I say unto you, that whosoever shall say unto this mountain, Be thou removed, and be thou cast into the sea, and shall not doubt in his heart, but shall believe that those things which he saith shall come to pass, he shall have whatsoever he saith. Therefore I say unto you, what things soever you desire, when ye pray, believe that ye receive them, and ye shall have them. And when ye stand praying, forgive, if ye have fought against any, that your Father also, which is in heaven, may forgive you your trespasses. But if you do not forgive, neither will your Father, which is in heaven, forgive your trespasses. And from Proverbs chapter 23. Let's start with verse 1. When thou sittest to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what is before thee. And put a knife to thy throat, if thou be a man given to appetite. Be not desirous of his dainties, for they are deceitful meat. Labor not to be rich. Cease from thine own wisdom. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away as an eagle toward heaven. Eat thou not the bread of him that hath an evil eye, neither desire thou his dainty meats. For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, saith he to thee, but his heart is not with thee. It's an interesting thing to conflate, as Jesus does, the ideas of, yes, the amount of faith it takes to have a mountain removed. And then whatever you ask for, God will give it to you. And then he ties that up with forgiving. And then to forgive others' trespasses. And to expect to be forgiven by God. One must do that. Jesus said one time, which is easier to say your sins are forgiven thee, or rise up and walk? And so Jesus was a man of miracles, as it said in the story is told in the Bible. And so he could do both. He could do either. But he knew which was more difficult. Rise up and walk, a man who's been probably atrophied muscles and nervous system not functioning correctly, to repair that damage and also to implant or impart to that person the way to walk, the way to make the limbs move. So though it's a small in scale thing, it's a single person. What's required there is truly great, and yet also, is it easier to say raise up a mountain and cast it into the sea? If you have such faith and you believe it, and such desire, you can do it. Master said that because he always spoke the truth. When he speaks something, it will happen by the power that he had gained in the spiritual attainment he had. Because of telling the truth, therefore, when he made a statement or a proclamation or a determination on someone or some people, it came true. It could come true. How much Master did things like this, we don't know. But to forgive sins, first of all, it's difficult to know how to do it. And then you have to have the power to do it. And those aren't always the same. Mother talked about having no knowledge about how to do miracles or to heal people. She'd never practiced it, and she'd never learned it from anyone. But she knew that some people were cured by her. But she kept her mind on God, and God did the work. But these things aren't necessarily true with someone like Mother and the great masters. They do know how God is working, but that they don't explain it to us. It's too shocking, too complex, and also it diverts the attention, diverts the mind too much. And then the Proverbs, talking about not to be seduced by rich people. Virtually similar to what Jesus said, that it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to gain heaven. Boy, he really put it to us, didn't he? Now, just a small detail, that it's possible that the word camel is mistranslated. It could be rope. It's very close, I guess, by one letter. It's the same word. Or something like that, I've read anyway. And that does make more sense. And there's other explanations. There's a gateway into Jerusalem that was called the Needle. And camels had to get down on their knees to get through it. But those are just part of the joy of learning the Bible and learning more details. And they are a diversion from that which Jesus was talking about. No, a pleasant diversion. The idea that these things are so hard and that rich people can seduce you with the table they can set, the things they can give you. It's pretty rough words here. When thou sittest to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what is before thee. And put a knife to thy throat if thou be a man given to appetite. So don't get diverted to the food. Be not desirous of his dainties, for they are deceitful meat. Labor not to be rich. Cease from thine own wisdom. In other words, don't use your own mind to sort these things out. Wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away as an eagle toward heaven. And then eat thou not the bread of him that hath an evil eye. Now, evil eye in most of the Middle East was envy. Sometimes envy of a person, and could do damage, could kidnap children, those kinds of things. Neither desire thou his dainty meats. Be steadfast. Keep your mind on God. Don't let your appetite take over. Have faith in God. Have faith such that you could move mountains. With such faith. These are crazy things, aren't they? There's stories of Hanuman doing the same thing, of lifting a mountain, and Krishna lifting a mountain. Shirdi Sai Baba, who passed in 1918 or so he was the older Sai Baba, one time came out, and some of his disciples had businesses, and they'd been there for a while maybe, and they were ready to go, and they'd asked his permission, and he'd given them permission. Then he walked out on the porch looking out, and the weather was just pouring down rain, and he spoke out to stop the rain, halt, and the rain stopped. The whole storm stopped. And his children, his disciples, out in their carts or however they traveled and walked or rode down the path back home. Mother's often more subtle, but she always would bring good weather. Not always, because then she becomes our slave. All we have to do is set a date and mother has to come up with the good weather. But it is uncanny how many times that is true. And how many times we remark on it. This goes back as far as I can remember. And mother never made any kind of a statement. These are different kind of gurus, different kinds of masters. I've always marveled at all the possible things that can go wrong. I talked about this before, that we have angels around us, camped about us, as it is said. But that the force of God's will, carrying out that which was foreordained to keep someone alive, a family alive, to lessen the impact of mistakes and damage to the body, to make us live, to allow us to live as long as God wants us to fulfill our destiny. These things are not accident. These are not random acts that cause other kinds of problems in life. None of this is random. But it is working out the will of the promises that God made, that we would live in a world where we could see the results of actions that we do. We can see the working of spirit and how the body interacts, how this person interacts, the soul interacts with the body and the world. I've always felt safe. Not that I wouldn't have anything happen to me, but just in overall, I felt that my destiny was secure when I met Mother. I know many others have felt that too. But not so for Mother. Where was God? Where were the angels when her husband lost his arms? Lost the use of his arms. Where was God during the depression? Where was God? When she couldn't feed her family. And she was pregnant. Can you imagine? But that strengthens people's will. It strengthens their resolve. It strengthens their faith. And they become heroes because of it. Not through anything they did, except to sustain themselves. Do we live on a planet that is so different than other planets that we have to live through wars and things like that, whereas other planets are more peaceful and your karma can be worked out either different in a different way, or that you gain access to that realm, to that world, in the physical realm and also in the astral realms, and certainly from the causal, that you have access to that world? Is this world a mixed world? It certainly is. One thing that has come to me many times is that people talk so much about rights, about what rights we have by nature, natural law, all those things. The first right that a person has when becoming A human being is a mother. That's a right. Those first few years are so determinative of a soul's growth and what they can do in this world. And it's, we don't doubt that people who go through tough times become stronger. But is that the only pathway we have in this world to, is to become heroic? Is that the only thing? Can we not just learn to live here in harmony? How can you have that harmony? How can it be gained easily without a mother? Without a father too. Another right. The right of a person entering into adulthood has to be prepared for that by a father. Both mother and father. But those first few months, we must have the mother there. That's a right. And a mother who's a good mother. Doing the best she can. How can she do that without a husband? Without a single person, though she may have other people in her life, without a person to share that load. The way humans are built, it takes years to be productive. We have to sustain that body and mind and spirit. So very important. And we have that right. And if we want to be prepared for the world, to do the best job and to gain the most of righteous living, and that's the important thing. It's not just living. One has to live a righteous life. You need a mother and a father for that as a minimum, and that's what a right means. But we would all hope for aunts and uncles and grandparents and friends all about a child, all around, arrayed around a child in their life. That's the best. If anyone remembers where we read this or heard this, I believe it was in the talk recently of David's or mother's. But anyway, that faith, hope and charity, hope and love is the way that was translated. That these are the three requirements or the three great gifts, and that they go in ascending order. Faith is important. Hope is the next highest gift and the second most important thing. And then the greatest gift is love and the most important thing. So I've been thinking about faith and hope. And how they interplay with each other. Sometimes people confuse them as one for the other. But faith is the evidence of things not seen. And hope is that eternal, unskeptical, positive hope for the future, looking to the future. One of the great faults of the mind, according to Sri Yukteswar, is skepticism. There's another word he puts with it. I think it's, you know, I don't remember. Anyway, it's just reflexive skepticism, that kind of thinking. It's okay to be skeptical, and that's the point he's trying to make. But just to be reflexively skeptical and to not and be invincibly skeptical is really a serious fault of the mind, and that the mind can lead you astray. It's a powerful tool. But it can't get too far from the feeling of hope. It's a funny thing to have love and charity be the two translations. Probably charity is from the King James Version, I'm pretty sure, and it probably reflects a nuanced meaning of compared to our own meaning today. That perhaps if one were to give charity, it must come from love, not duty. Something to think about. So maybe the correct way to look at it. Love is always giving, and so is charity. Always, love gives you a charitable attitude. We can all see the connection. Mother always said, love. For that, faith, hope, and love. But she would read charity too. Been thinking we need to have a book, a biography of Mother. We have so many interviews of people who knew her, recorded. Most video recorded, actually. So I think I'll try to get those transcribed, the ones that aren't transcribed. And start the long process of putting pen to paper, so to speak. I've been reading the book, sitting at the feet of Ram Dass, and so I'm just so aware of how much Papa gave to Mother and brought her in so close. And I've said this before, but I've been thinking about it a lot lately, that the parts of the gospel, evidently, they were printed before in the Vision magazine in serial form and then later assembled into a book. But what struck me was the timing of the book coming out. Because, of course, we don't know what was in the journal, their Vision, excuse me. It'd be interesting to see if everything was there. Or that more may have been there. But one thing we do know, thinking it through, is that when Mother was there in India in 1977, one of the things that happened was she was able to talk to Swami Satchidananda in depth, and that she explained to him things that he didn't know. He might have been able to see that something greater was going on. But he did tell us at different times anyway. He said that Papa never said anything about Mother to the devotees. He never said anything about what was going on with her. So, though we have the stories of Mother doing the things that she did for the crucifixion and all the experiences that she had under him, that's from within. That's what she saw. And that vision, that view of things was not shared by other people. So My mother told him details about what she had gone, what she was going through. He was so enthused. He said, Mother told us, Mother, when you get back to Seattle, you must write this down. You must start your book. And his contribution, this is what's clear to me. Mother was there in late 77. The book came out in early 79. So most of 1978, throughout that time after Mother left, in my mind's eye, I see Swamiji deciding to put that book out, to aid Mother in what she was faced with in terms of the book. And that book, Sitting at the Feet of Ram Dass, is very powerful for having that, just the parts that are with Mother. Very, very powerful reading. Probably somewhere like the 8th to 10th time I've read through that whole section of the gospel. And it's pretty powerful, rich spiritual food. What a gift he gave to us. So much great attainment in the spirit was evidenced in Mother's life before she went to see Papa, went to see the ashram, to spend time at the ashram. So, and that's pretty evidenced in that book, because what Mother was talking, the level that she's talking to Papa on, the things that happened. So she was talking about the crucifixion, and Papa said, perhaps, all right, let's see what you do with a universal crucifixion. Can you bear the load? Now the ego, the human self, Papa wouldn't give much help, but inwardly definitely he was helping. He prepared that whole thing. When Mother first got there, I'm going to read this. The first day or two, Mother says, we have been thinking of you. We have been telling our friends about you. Papa, my guru taught the same thing as you tell us now. I tell people that you are the ideal our guru taught. Is not Christ consciousness lower than cosmic consciousness? I mean to say, was Jesus Christ not in the dual plane? Papa says, Christ consciousness is the highest consciousness, that is cosmic consciousness. Jesus had a body, and that was the manifestation of the cosmic consciousness. Jesus had often said, I and my Father are one. I am on my Father's business. He maintained his oneness with the supreme truth, but at the same time said that he was the Son of the Father in heaven. He saw evil so as to set the evildoers right. He lashed at the moneylenders to make them give up their evil. Christ was the very personification of God. There's a discussion of idol worship, which is quite good and quite revealing. Papa shows that people are at different levels. When a devotee stands before an image, he must feel that image is only a form of the Supreme Being. Through the worship of the form, he must go to the formless. For children in the spiritual line, there must be something to hold on to. Those who crawl must get up to stand only by holding on to some support. Worship of the personal form is that support. If they do not have that support, they will never be able to stand up at all. After they stand properly, they can give up the support. Got something in mind here, bear with me. Yes. The back gives, only the back gives a little pain. I am all right. The back alone gives a little pain, she says. Mother says, Papa, I was sitting and writing in the room. Suddenly, Papa was before me in my mental vision. We got up and came here. So you have been possessed by Papa. Sit down. Ram Dass will read out something from this book, The Persian Mystics. Mansoor was a great Sufi saint. He had experienced oneness with God. Thereafter, he was going on saying, Anul Haq, meaning I am God. In those days, it was considered blasphemous. He was very much persecuted and was finally pitched on a spear or a trident that was fixed on the ground. Blood was dripping from his wound. Wonderful it was. Each drop of the blood that fell down repeated the words, Anul Haq. Papa then read out, when Mansoor was imprisoned for proclaiming oneness with God, his friend Shibli asked him, what is this love? Come tomorrow, and Mansoor says, come tomorrow for an answer, he said. Shibli obeyed and found Mansoor facing the gallows. Mansoor looked at him and said, read the answer. Love begins in absorbing the eye and ends thus. Its noose tightens to squeeze out the self. Then comes the test of the cross. Stay if thou apprehendest the secret, otherwise go. After finishing the reading, Papa raised his head with a beaming smile, looked at both of them and said, hear what he says. Love begins in absorbing the eye and ends thus. And here's even more. I mean, this is interesting. He then turned the page over again and again read, if a lame dog finds admission at thy gate and the weary are refreshed by thy sight, no reason have I for despair. And later, O Lord, if thou holdest me responsible for my sins, I shall cling to thee for thy grace. I, with my sin, am an insignificant atom. Thy grace is resplendent as the sun. Now, but look at this. This is what's really all coming together. Read the answer. Love begins in absorbing the eye and ends thus. Its noose tightens to squeeze out the self. Then comes the test of the cross. Stay if thou apprehendest the secret, otherwise go. Clearly people see the cross is that cross, which is our karma, our body, our test. And here, now this is the, I believe it's the same day they came. This is just later in the same day. Let me look. Papa is telling them they first stepped down. Yeah, October 15th, so it's the day after. They first stepped down, and he tells them about blood dripping on the ground, saying, Anul Haq. And that there's an image of a noose, which is that which prepares, and the cross, that which liberates. And to see the cross correctly, as Mansoor is saying, what a thing Papa was doing. He planned all this. God planned it. Oh, how we wish Mother were here now so we could talk to her about this and asked her what she thought. Two different times. One, when Papa was reading it to her, she couldn't possibly have known what was in store. But years later, when she's reading this, surely it hit her that Papa was telling them. He was foreshadowing what she was about to go through. The section on Mother ends on Mother. The last title is, let's see, it's something to do with Mother's. Oh, yeah. So the very last one is 592, Mildred Hamilton and her experiences. So, and the gist of the conversation, Ramdas was praying to Ram that he must have so much power. Okay. We were talking about, so here this is Papa. We were talking about Ramdas sitting for meditation in the mornings nowadays. Papa then told him the gist of the conversation and continued. Ramdas was praying to Ram that he must have so much power and radiance that those who came before him must get spiritually illumined. Mother says, I feel that already when I sit before you. Papa says, see, your face is so radiant and full of joy. Your eyes, how bright they are. Mother then took some type sheets of paper from her table and said, this is what I noted down when Swamiji could not be with us one afternoon and when you said the most wonderful things. I wanted to give this to Swamiji for his record. She then read out the typed matter containing Papa's talk with her on the 5th of November. But I asked Papa about the various states of samadhi from that subject. He went on to talk about the various sadhanas necessary in order to have the complete self-realization, stressing the need for the spiritual aspirant to be quiet and alone at times so that he might meditate uninterruptedly upon God. As he went on talking about the various practices and the stages one goes through in order to attain, I tried to determine, after thinking over the events of my own busy life and the fact that I'd had but very little opportunity to do any of the things which he said were necessary, just what my actual state of development was. So I said, Papa, I have never had the opportunity to do any of the things you have said. Remember, Papa was talking about sadhana in order to gain these things. Necessary. Yet in spite of the fact that I could seldom sit in meditation, the bliss of God has filled me so greatly that I have been almost helpless in it. Will you please tell me what state of development I'm in? How can mere words describe the radiance which appeared on his face? The wistfulness, now this is Mother recounting this, not Swamiji. So she says, how can mere words describe the radiance which appeared on his face? The wistfulness and the look of ineffable love and tenderness. In the pause that followed, he put his hands together, as he does, when he is filled to overflowing with bliss, and said like a small, shy boy, Ramdas can only tell you that you are his divine mother. He sees you as the very embodiment of God's light. You are a shining being spreading your love, light, and bliss on all. For a moment, the whole world stood still as I got the full impact of his words and of the spirit within him, realizing that here from the lips of God himself was a verification of what he had told me when I was in samadhi. In the suspended state in which I found my consciousness, it seemed as though this was at once both my destiny and its fulfillment. When finally I could speak, I said, I feel that I have attained God, but the terrible way of the cross over which I have come remains in my consciousness and makes me doubt. God has revealed to me the inner truth about much of the scriptures. What about the rest of them? Do I not still have to receive that? And Papa replied, forget the scriptures. You have risen far above them. It is not necessary for you to follow the practices laid down for others. The scriptures are only for the benefit and guidance of those who are still on the path. Let the love of God overflow within your being to enlighten others. He will use you to give his truth, his wisdom, and his love to all with whom you come into contact. I said, you mean he will supply the rest of the knowledge of the scriptures as they are needed? Papa answered, God's grace has come to you through your guru. He is working through you to do all things. Then Mother, this is the very end of the section on, towards the very end, Mother's section with Papa. And she says, now Papa, I want to ask you a question. So now we're back to the normal way Swami Satchidananda is recounting things. She finished reading, placed the typed notes back on the table and said, now I want to ask you a question. Father, Ralph, says that Papa sees all women as the Divine Mother and that there is nothing special if he says so in my case. What do you say about it? Papa laughed and kept quiet for a few minutes. He looked at Ralph, then at Mildred, at Karan Jakor and Swamiji. And then he looked down smiling. All the while, others were eagerly waiting for him to speak, wondering what his answer would be. They were not kept in suspense for long. Papa raised his head. His face broadened into a smile and he said, he, Ralph, is right in a way. All of you are God. Ramdas looks upon all women as the forms of the universal mother. But when you, turning to Mother Mildred, ask the question, the reply was suitable for the occasion. When Ramdas looks at others, he does not see merely their exterior. He sees deep within them all the divine spirit, God. By so doing, alone, Ramdas can awaken God in others. That is God seeing God. That is the truth. Ramdas knows it is God only who has assumed all these forms in the universe. He is the guru, and he himself is the disciple. As a disciple, he pretends that he is ignorant and asks to be guided by the guru. As a guru, he pretends that he has realized and guides the disciple. The whole world is pretense. We must see him alone in all the forms. So we know that Papa told Swamiji to not continue writing down things at some stage, obviously. I wonder if there aren't other notes that Swamiji made and we might get our hands on someday. He decided to end the book at this point. But it is interesting that he ends it with Mother writing the story, because David said, probably Papa felt that it was Mother's story to tell, meaning that Swamiji didn't write the rest of the Hamilton's trip, because they were there for many more months and no mention of them. And David said, probably because Papa and Swamiji felt it was Mother's story to tell. And even in the very last of the Gospel, it's she who is telling the story. And getting confirmation for what God had told her. So there's a story here. It's quite amazing. And don't I love the fact that Papa puts it all back on Master. He is working his will through you. He's the one who's doing this. And so devotees of Papa might say, oh yes, but Papa did all the work with you through the crucifixion. But Papa knows that whatever state Mother was in, he was enamored of that state, and he knew it well. He could see it in Mother. As he says, I could see deep within the divine God. And so he did a truly wonderful thing for this. He took on the burden or the responsibility for Mother at the ashram in India during that time. In respect for the work that Master was doing in the West. Now Papa had traveled to the West and he could see that what Babaji told Master and others was true, that there's people calling out in the Western world and they want this higher teachings, and Master was sent to give it. He was sent. And Master had tremendous, tremendous power and tremendous responsibility. And he gave it out to different souls who were under his charge, who had come to be with him during his lifetime in the West. It all makes sense. None of these things happen by random chance, by happenstance. They happen because of the will of God expressed in action. Any thoughts?
I have a little section from a letter from Swami Satchidananda that I think would be interesting to read.
Oh, good. Please do.
If I can find it. So this is from March 10th, 1982.
Can you turn your video on just for this? If you don't mind. Yes. That's better. Nice to see your face. Mm.
Your letter brought back the old days, the blessed days we had with beloved Papa. I remember very well all that you have written and how beloved Papa took care of you in every possible way and clearly told you what you would become. When we are in communion with God, the so-called worldly suffering is not suffering, though the onlookers may make much of it. That was how you went through those difficult days, difficult for others even to see. But God took you through those experiences and lifted you up. Glad that now, by the divine will, you have been prompted to write down your experiences. May He enable you to complete the work soon and bring the book out for the benefit of the aspiring ones.
That's very powerful, Jill. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I just was brought to it at about 6 o'clock tonight, that letter.
Oh, is that right? Interesting.
Yeah.
That needs to be part of the research for sure.
Yeah. And to find the letter that prompted that letter back from Swami Sachin.
Right, right. Thank goodness for carbon copies. We might have it, but you never know.
Yeah. And the ashram might have it.
The ashram might have it.
Yeah.
So you can see where I've got to go in January. You know, I feel such a strong pull from Swami Muktananda. I just can't hardly, you know, after having him in our house, it's such a powerful memory and powerful experience that it's just, he just pulls me there. I want to go so badly different times just to be with him.
I was, I know I had asked at the ashram one time if they had anything else that could, you know, be something to do with mother.
Interesting. And
I was given a few things, but not those letters, although we could ask specifically for them.
Now,
and we have a date and everything too. Right, so if Swamiji, right.
Yeah.
If Swamiji kept his correspondence.
It could be, yeah. And I'll have to look more and see if there's any other letters than that. Than that one from him. I mean, mother's initial letter.
Yeah. The other letter that, and Larry knows about this already, but he's been feeling the urge to write, to really focus on mother's biography, and a letter that came into my hands last week was from David in 1991 saying he was compiling the pieces for mother's biography, but that another one would be writing it, that it wouldn't be him.
Yeah, that's something.
Great masters speak to us as concretely or as ethereally as we need.
I just think it is so meaningful that Papa said to Mother, "You're already, you know, you are already that."
Yeah.
In different words. And just enjoy God bubbling up and flowing through you. But she persisted in asking about the mystical crucifixion.
Mm-hmm.
And her will was so strong.
Well,
in that direction that she had to
That's right.
And had Papa to experience that.
Papa still has a responsibility to tell her what he did. He needs, I think, you know, you have to be careful with the disciples in the sense that you can't build them up and you can't tear them down. It's better to be quiet, you know. And so for him, for Mother to ask her question, he gave her the standard teachings that he always gave to everyone. Because if she did exactly what he said, she would, and her destiny was, to have these the teachings on the mystical crucifixion, then that's following. She's following to the letter what he's saying. But by saying it that way, he forces her mind to stay on the higher path getting there, to always keep that, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven. That's the way that if you see that destiny so strongly, then just follow, even following the higher, even not pretending to follow the other path, God will direct you to it if you legitimately focus on God, because again, that's your destiny, that's what God put you here for. So I still think it's interesting, there's an aspect of different way people talk about Papa's telling Mother not to read, not to worry about the scriptures and all that. Mm-hmm. And I remember Yogacharya Black said to me a similar thing, you know. But if you follow that inner path as being described by Papa and Yogacharya Black is what he's saying, and it puts you right on the path of the mystical crucifixion and the interpretation of the Bible, who's to say that's wrong? In fact, it's clearly not. It's clearly Mother's destiny.
Yeah, I agree completely. That's what she, God and her knew that was her destiny. And she basically asked, you know, is asking, nothing basic about it.
She could have been confused by Papa saying that. You know, she felt strongly that she should do it. And then Papa's directing her elsewhere. But he is directing her up. And that's the going up will take her to the same spot. Mm-hmm. But it is the sure way.
The thing that's coming to me is that Papa is saying it's not a roadmap. It's a description.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. It directs your mind to be that, to go in that direction. Seek ye first, and all things will be added unto you. Certainly, that was just charge that Mother was given, was added unto her.
Yeah.
If Papa had instead said, oh, yes, you've got great insights on the scriptures. You really need to focus on that. Is that, we don't know Mother's state, but is that really the best thing to say? Not when it's, you know, it's not consistent with everything else Papa teaches. So she had to find this out for herself, but she had to also follow the instructions he was giving, so she was balanced in that way. Mm-hmm.
You have made him say it.
Don't you love that? Don't you love that? I know. And Swamiji, God bless him, to write that down so beautifully. Mm-hmm. And to witness that. Let's see our closing prayer. Oh, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet and surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Oh. Oh. Okay. Do a little meditation music on the way out. This is about the singer Rebecca Bales, who she saw a young at an orphanage. She saw a young boy sitting on his bed, looking listlessly into space and lonely. So she sings him a lullaby.
Soft and beautiful and deep.
Hare Om.